trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Episode 31 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. Joining us on the show today, we have got Rick Vanover. Rick?
Hey, woo. Hey. Sorry, I've been AWOL. Last two times, I think I got a call in the grocery store. And
you
then
did?
While I was boarding a plane. Yeah. So time zone troubles, but I'm back. Let's rock it.
And what's your story this week? Because you're pulling out the stops to make it onto the show, really, aren't you?
I am. I'm in New York City right now in the airport, and I just put a photo up on Google+, but I'm in transit. I'm off to Halifax, Nova Scotia in Canada for a security event. It's a very interesting event. It's an independent security event, and then next week I go to RSA, the other security event. So a very interesting dichotomy for this week and next week for me.
And you are recording outside of the bathroom in the airport, right? You're not inside.
I decided to pick the absolute closest chair to the bathroom. That's right. We're ready to go.
Cool. We've also got Gabriel Chapman. How are you, Gabriel?
I am doing well, Nigel and Rick and everyone else. What, did I come across garbly?
No.
Oh.
No. You just didn't
just
come
latent.
Across.
Just latent.
Oh, well, yeah. Networking, yeah.
It's the network. It's always the network.
I didn't jiggle the cable.
You've recovered from your bird flu properly then?
I am getting intermittent signal.
Yeah, I think you are. Let's go and talk to Mark then. So Mark, you're with us as well this week. You've been poorly, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I had whatever bird flu that Gabriel had, but... Yeah, exactly. But at least I've got better latency, not great latency, but better.
Cool. All right, then. So following on from last week, the LinkedIn discussion on VMware and legacy just refuses to go away. We're not going to talk about it now, but if you want to get involved, it has been a cracking discussion. It's still up there on LinkedIn. People are still contributing and commenting. Yeah, we'll just leave that at that. Next week, though, we're going to have a live show from the Tech Unplugged event in London on Tuesday the 22nd.
Hey!
Yeah, the London VMUG on the 23rd. Now, you're giving Woots there, Mark, for the Tech Unplugged event. I do think if you're in London on Tuesday next week, there still are a few tickets left, I think.
How can that be? I don't understand how that can possibly be.
Well, Enrico sent out the list of people today, and there is literally only a handful left. But what I think he's doing is assuming that not everybody that signed up will attend. So I do think if everyone on the list rocked up, it'd be standing room. But yeah, I mean, it looks like a good attendance, good turnout, I think.
Those events tend to get like 20% people don't show up. You know?
Oh, yeah. I'd have thought at least, to be honest. I think maybe up to 50.
Yeah, I see in my professional experience, maybe it's just because I'm on the diary, but I see a good 30 to 50% drop off of registered versus attendee unless you go to the really unappreciated areas, New Zealand, Nova Scotia, the geographically isolated places in the world, almost 100%. Those people are very thankful that you go out to those types of places.
They take a bus around to all 50 people who live in those countries.
Come on. New Zealand has like 4.5 million people, bro. Come on.
It'll be like Saul Goodman preaching to the old folks.
Better call
Sorry,
Saul.
That was a Better Call Saul joke, whatever. You know what really matters, though, is having the kitchens next to the bathrooms.
Copy that.
Inside joke, I think, there. So the kitchen's right by the bathroom in your airport, right, Rick?
Actually, no. They couldn't be farther apart.
Okay, that one didn't work. Anyway,
no, it didn't work.
Some hot talk going on today, man. Bathroom talk, bird flu talk.
Well, no, it's an inside joke. Mark and I, or maybe it was Nigel.
No,
we
not
did
me.
Mark and I did a InfoSmack, and I was literally in the bathroom. That was the quietest place that I had. And I love you, Mark, but you tore me up about it.
What the heck happens when you're recording a podcast in the bathroom and somebody next to you, I was going to say flushes, but it could be worse. What if they're like exploding on there?
Nigel, it's a simple trade-off. Quiet versus disruption versus echo. You take the echo every time.
Okay.
And your recorder needs flush mute.
Flushmute.com. You can download it for free.
Flushmute technology. I learned about that on Silicon Valley. Another joke.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, Jesus. We're knocking them out of the park today.
Oh, yeah. Just what the hell?
Yeah, maybe I should, like, stay away. But let's go on to more serious things, Nigel.
I should be the one staying away. I'm laying the eggs here, so whatever.
Let's talk about some tech news from this week, right? AWS, it just keeps marching on, right? This time, it appears to be heaping misery and gloom on old NetApp, right? There's talk of Elastic File System planned for later this year. I think maybe we'll definitely come back and talk about that one in a second. Also, though, we've got Coho talking the talk about containers and storage microservices, basically running storage-related tasks inside of containers running on the Coho metal. At least I think that's what they're talking about. On the public cloud front, HP are adamant that they're not pulling out of the public cloud model. Now, my take on this was, in order to pull out, don't you have to be in it in the first place?
Oh, anyway,
yeah. But check this out, right? Apparently, they're still in the public cloud game, but they're not competing with the likes of AWS. I don't get that. After that, though, we've got some news about Veeam and Cisco, which I think I'll probably hand the mic over to you, Rick, on that one. And if we've got time at the end, really interesting article by Robin Harris, Storage Mojo, just heaping even more misery and woe on NetApp. So AWS marches on, right? I don't know if you guys heard this week, but they have pre-announced Elastic File System, right? Basically, NFS version 4 for EC2 instances. So it's going to be scalable. It's going to be huge. It's going to perform well because it's SSD-backed. It's durable. And it's like, from what I saw, 30 cents a gigabyte per month based on your average usage over the month. Now, I mean, they've already got S3 for object storage and Elastic Block Storage, yeah, and Glacier. Honestly, these guys are just rocking it. I mean, NetApp, they must be crying into their pillows over this, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think this is a really tough one for them. You know, Amazon has not had file services. And so NetApp's had co-location stuff with them. Why would you co-locate anything with NetApp when you can just use the file services that are there on AWS?
Well, also, you know, the NetApp pushed so hard to engage and be part of that bridge into the AWS. They had their NetApp private storage for AWS, cloud on tap for AWS, storage grid. You know, all these different services and products built around leveraging the AWS model. And now it's kind of like, hey, thanks for playing. We're just going to do that ourselves. And you know,
but surely they know that's playing with fire, right? You're dancing with the devil there. What do you expect?
Well, some of those customers will still use those services, but other customers will just say, well, shoot, if I'm going to have file services in the cloud, I'm just going to do it native and on Amazon. It's a really big deal. It's not just NetApp either. You know, Amazon is not just going after NetApp. They're going after this large opportunity for enterprise storage that requires file services, right? There's a lot of big companies that require file services. Amazon got the message, and so they came out with a service. I mean, they want everybody to run everything on AWS, you know, as quickly as possible. So, you know, whatever you have, if you think you've got a service out there that is safe from Amazon, you might as well forget it.
Oh, yeah. But surely NetApp have got to be hit the hardest, or at least certainly one of the hardest, because maybe they're not a one-trick pony, but they are still so focused on that kind of, I don't know if big iron's the right term, but classic filer model from 10, 15, 20 years ago that just is being eaten alive right now. And what else do they have other than that? And it's not a great deal, is it?
Well, file iron, right? If it's not big iron, it's file iron.
Right, yeah.
They are on-prem file iron, period. They still are that. And I don't think Amazon's going to take that away from them, honestly.
Really?
Because, well, on-prem, qualified it. You know, there's still people, you know, I talked to my mates today that used to work at the bank. No go on the cloud-o, okay?
Yes.
It's just not going to happen. Same for medical. Same for data that really, really matters. So I'm not too worried about it, but where I'm going to watch are new applications that say, hey, you have such a light infrastructure requirement for this app. We'll do all of our files. You can do it on-prem if you want, or you can go to this Elastic File System in Amazon. That's when applications start supporting it. That's when I need to really turn heads, in my opinion.
And I think they're not aiming for the on-prem stuff directly because it's only available to EC2 instances, at least at the moment. Well, I mean, it's not even available yet. But when it becomes available, it's available for EC2 instances. But surely over time, there will be less and less on-prem. I mean, it's not going to totally go away, but that market is... I mean, if we've talked to death about the fiber channel market being stagnant and shrinking, then I think the on-prem market is very much the same over the next few years.
That's fair, but I think there's more stuff going on today that while the overall spend is going up, cloud, off-prem, whatever, non-fiber channel goes up. But, you know, the fiber channel numbers, they're still out there. It's probably not what I would deploy net new today, but people are using it.
But if you're not applying it to net new today and net new tomorrow or anything, that pretty much just means that you're coasting, you know, you got the long tail to nothing.
Well, right. You've got the tattoo and you want to, you know, make it match your data center, right? You've got FC on your forearm. That's those types of people, the entrenched, they're stuck in it today. But, you know, it's going to take technology generations, I think, for that to really dismiss. I don't see that changing uber quick myself.
Right. It'll take time. But, I mean, this is just part of Amazon trying to build a hybrid IT, right? For a long time, Amazon just said, we're in the public cloud business. We don't really care about hybrid. But at the last week's AWS summit, they're talking about hybrid. Right, and the difference between their hybrid and everybody else's is when they talk about hybrid, they say eventually you'll come to us, right? And nobody else really presents it that way or thinks about it that way. And I think having NFS file services, Elastic File Services, is a core chunk of that, you know, of their hybrid IT vision, which is we'll take little pieces of these applications over time. You know, people will upload the data, transport it, whatever, and we'll just start operating with that here. I don't think they're talking about moving the data back and forth between on-prem and the cloud. They're just talking about we'll clip off little pieces as we can.
Well, I mean, in anticipation of the proposed announcement of what AWS is in terms of revenue coming later this year, I mean, all of these bits and pieces help bolster that number.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure Microsoft already has something like this, and nobody made a big deal out of it when Azure had it. But when Amazon has it, it's all of a sudden a big scary thing.
But isn't that because Amazon is still like streets ahead, really, in the number of customers and services and things like that?
Right, but Azure is number two.
Oh, yeah.
And it's you can't play
a short period of time, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you can't play the knock-knock who's there, second place who. You can't play that game in this market. Azure is for real, and their hooks to the applications, I think, long-term, is going to make the difference. Amazon apps are so different. Personally, I have trouble latching onto it myself.
But I'm just saying, I mean, this has already been out there by the number two player, and nobody even knew, nobody even cared. Amazon announced it, and everybody's, like, getting their hair up about it.
Now, I'll put this in the show notes. Rightscale.com just put an article out, Cloud Computing Trends for 2015, State of the Cloud Survey, right? Where they've got Amazon, obviously, out there, AWS, clear number one. I forget what the numbers were, right? But like you've just said there, Azure or Azure, honestly, I can never remember how to pronounce it, whatever, right?
It's Azure.
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 Are you Azure? You want to get your stuff in the cloud?
Are you sure? Oh, that's awesome.
No, that's terrible. Anyway, Microsoft Azure, we'll go with that, okay? You're right. The clear number two. And in that very short period of time, okay? Now, check this out as well, right? They talked about private cloud storage. And they had some numbers, right? So vSphere and vCenter at 33% of market share there. And vCloud, whatever they're calling it, 13% of market share. OpenStack, 13%. But Microsoft Azure Pack, which I think is their cloud platform service, I think. But it's their, like, private...
The on-prem implementation.
Yes. Right. 7% of estimated market share. Now, you know what? That is not far off of OpenStack, really, in a very, very short period of time. I mean, Microsoft are proper serious about this, yeah?
True that. Now, the one thing to remember, though, is a lot of Microsoft customers have bought these services by their ELAs and whatever. There's a whole nother discussion of how much is implemented and in use for production.
Yes, that gets back to that whole consumption discussion of how much of the stuff that Microsoft sold is actually being consumed.
Yeah.
There's a question mark there. Yeah.
Right. And it's impossible to properly quantify it.
No, and they're not going to break it up.
I was just looking something up that I worked out earlier, right? So check this out. I don't know if it's directly what you were talking about there, but from a consumption perspective, right? Apparently, Amazon or AWS fires up enough machinery every day to run Amazon.com from 2004. So every day it spins up enough kit to power Amazon.com from 2004, which at the time was a $7 billion company. Now then, crappy shoddy math here, okay? But if it's doing a $7 billion company every day, or, you know, the equivalent infrastructure for, times that by 365, and I think that's $2.5 trillion worth of company every year spun up on AWS. I mean, that's insane, right? It puts that talk of like 3 million servers in AWS into context, I think. That's just like, that's ridiculous, right? I can't even comprehend that.
Yeah, but you're really mixing apples and oranges.
I know,
right?
I know.
You know, Amazon in 2004 was a huge business, right? A huge transaction machine, if you will, right? So most of the stuff that's being started up on Amazon that consumes all these CPU cycles and whatnot, they're not really generating that size of business, not even close.
No, but it's still a cool number, right? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous infrastructure still.
You're trying to get a job there?
No, not at all. I don't know anything about this stuff.
We're all probably going to end up working for him, before long.
It's funny. I'll have to dig it up, but I thought I had a picture of like Google's first, their first data center, their first place where they'd spun up like Google, say circa 1998, and it was really just like it was like a desk with some servers on it and some servers under it, like boxes, like Sun boxes, and that was it. That was running Google for when they first started to go to market. If you look and see what Google's building today in terms of a data center, it's unfathomable.
Yeah. Well, where is Google in these numbers?
Big. Yeah, not good. Well, not compared to Azure.
Yeah, and if you talk about hybrid anything, Google is totally inept when it comes to enterprise. They don't know what enterprise means. They're a consumer company.
Yeah, they're the opposite to Microsoft in that sense.
Well, that's true. And honestly, my whole mantra the last few years is there's more stuff. And if there's a whole nother stuff to non-enterprise, then maybe Google's the leader there.
So VMware is trying to dry hump Google to get something going, but Google doesn't even know.
Ooh, the cloud dry hump. You did not drop that on this podcast. Wow.
Nice. Hey, random question then, right? So, AWS and Azure and the public cloud in general, right? But I'll just pick AWS because I'm trying to get a job there, right?
Is that going to be the title of the show? Nigel wants to work at AWS?
Yeah. No. So when they do plateau, right, or stall or whatever, is that like a serious threat to the global economy because they're so huge, or are they not really that huge? Am I getting carried away?
No, you're getting carried away. It's not a huge threat. I'm convinced, you look at every big business – there's still room for incredible data modernization, information gathering. I'm at an airport. I'm looking at luggage carts. I'm looking at vehicle carts. I'm looking at staff that are loading planes. Literally every single one of those could be smart controlled today or tomorrow, I should say. And there's room for more stuff. I'm convinced that, no, that's not going to be a problem.
All right.
Where's that background noise coming from? Gabriel, where are you?
No, it's probably me. It's probably N95AT.
For once, I'm not the source of all noise.
All right, so let's shift on to maybe a bit of a nothing story, actually. Coho, they are running, or they're going to run, storage-related services. So things like, I guess, I'm saying I guess, from what I've read, snapshots, thin provisioning, dedupe, but apparently, potentially, audio and video encoding, log analysis, anything that could potentially be ran closer to the storage, they're talking about on their hardware, spinning up Docker containers and running dedupe jobs or encoding jobs and stuff like that. It's going to need a bunch of custom event-based logic triggers and stuff like that, so a bunch of developer stuff. Is this of any interest? Is it a sign of things to come? Are we going to see storage vendors start to want to leverage container technologies and things like this? Or are Coho doing what I sometimes feel Coho do, and is this just a bit of a science project?
Yeah, just what customers want to see is experimental, what they view as experimental technology to manage their data. You know, what a step in the wrong direction. I mean, even mentioned that in public, you know, to talk about that is just stupid. They're kowtowing to investors, you know, in the whose is it or whatever in the valley here, but it's got nothing to do with making customers happy, that's for sure.
Well, let me take a different approach, Mark, and I definitely do not underestimate your insight to this. They may be ahead of their time, friends. You know, think about it. And I'm going to give you an example from recent history. Do you remember when Hitachi had their AMS, their unified storage, file, block? And then they touted really big, we're going to add object to it. This is loosely, very, very loosely, the same type of thing, where we're going to add these new things to the old things. And so I'm going that they might be ahead of their time, and they might get it right, and they might really have the most time in the market to get it right eventually. So
yeah, but Rick, that's Hitachi. I know, but Rick, that's Hitachi, a company that's been selling storage for 50 years versus Coho Storage has been selling it for about 5 months. You know, coming out, hey, here's something that's new that's broken.
Well, right? They might be trying to ride the tails of success, or, you know, ambulance chasing whatever the shiny thing is, but if it's good, and I don't know anything about it, but they literally might be on to something. We just don't know yet.
To me, it sounds like they have Valley disease.
A VD? They've got a VD?
Yeah,
nice.
They definitely have a little bit of VD there.
Valley disease.
All right, and I'll quote something I saw on the Register as a comment. 2 years out of stealth, and frankly, no one understands what their route to market is. They seem to glom onto any hot tech and either poke a stick at it or try to tag along. Guess the product can't stand on its own.
Is there a CEO Ooh. British? They really
Was that signed by somebody from NetApp?
No, anonymous coward. So that's always a good one. But yeah, I would agree with a little bit of that sentiment, right? Because, you know, I think Andrew is a really smart guy. I met him at a storage conference a while ago. I think I mentioned this in the passing one time. You know, just great person to talk the technology about. They got like some really cool stuff that they're wanting to do. But it is a bit of a science project. And it's also, you know, if you're bringing a company to market, you really have to have a kind of a defined message and kind of keep it very simple in the beginning and not just start to latch on to a bunch of different things. So, you know, they're poking the stick at, you know, or poking at hyperconversion, saying that's the wrong way to go to market or the wrong way to do certain things. Or they're trying to tag along with containers or something like that. And those two things, it's like, you know what? I still don't know what Coho's value proposition is and what it really brings in terms of value to me as a customer. I've never seen them in the field. And you know, I think we all run in circles where we see a lot of different storage technologies out there. And frankly, they seem pretty invisible in terms of, you know, what their actual, you know, what their market penetration is like, who they're actually selling to, who their target customer or client is. I mean, I just don't see them. And I don't really understand what they're trying to do.
You know what? I think I agree with every comment there. I think, Mark, you're right. They probably do have Valley disease. Rick, you're right. I think they probably are ahead of their time as well. But that's not necessarily a great thing, is it? You need to get that timing right.
Right. You got to come on at the right time with the right solution. And best example of ahead of their time was 14 years ago. Remember Oracle? Who? Oracle? Right. They came out with the browser-only computer a la Chromebook. Do you remember they came out with that? And it failed miserably, even a big company like Oracle. So maybe Coho's ahead of their time. We won't know until a few years from now. But, you know, it could be VD, could could be the crack pipe. Who knows? But to Gabe's comments, I don't see people in the field using Coho. I know people at Coho, but I've never bumped into it in production.
All right, then.
Just shovel a bunch of dirt on them.
I know.
God. We're not getting a job at Coho, that's for sure, friends.
They're looking for people.
We're hedging our bets on AWS for jobs in the future, so that's not going anywhere.
We're lining up behind Nigel for those.
Yeah.
Well, Nigel's podcast, be very clear.
No, you're not getting recruiter calls from AWS?
Negatory.
We all are.
I am.
Well, that's because you're smart.
I've had like three of them in the last year. I actually interviewed with AWS.
Oh, here we go. This is personal and private.
You should have gone.
Oh, hey now.
Yeah, you're not. Now you disclose something, you're in trouble. You'll have a drone over your house in no time.
Make sure we got two recorders.
I know. No, I mean, in what they want from their sales engineers. I mean, it's a very broad, it's a very broad, very generic skill set, but it also has to be fairly deep in each one of those very broad and very generic skill sets. So they're kind of they're looking for people who can do it all. Oh, and I
hope they're paying a lot of money.
And the before and after pictures aren't pretty. In one picture, you have an ass, and the other one, you don't.
Oh, boy. Wow.
The one thing I've heard is that it's a very tough work-life balance.
Right, you work your ass off.
Yeah. And you know what? And there are good benefits associated with it, you know, from what I recall in the discussion. It was, you know, the compensation package was fair. And
Fair. Not generous. Fair.
It was fair. Right?
Fair. Okay.
I don't know. As a sales engineer for Amazon Web Services, I mean, I just don't have any information on what their, you know, what is their quota, what kind of attainment, what kind of margins are on there. I mean, I've never sold those types of services. So for me, it would be completely alien versus hardware and,
margin, you know, and unit cost. It's pretty straight up.
Yeah.
And weekends at the warehouse filling orders.
All hands on peak, baby. All hands.
Part-time drone pilot, you know, audiobook author or audiobook reader. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different options.
Kindle
assembler. Fire phone, you know, repairman.
So does anybody have a clue what HP's public cloud story is? Because, okay, so they've got Helion, an OpenStack-based public cloud. And they've just been in the news this week saying, yes, we are still in that business. But then in the next sentence, we're still in the business because we don't compete with AWS. I just don't grok that at all.
Well, I mean, I hate to say it, friends, especially, you know, two of you, a deep storage background. It feels a lot like when HP told us the EVA is not dead. But then it really feels the same. I'm serious. I don't know. The cloud, this is a market that really has room for three or four players. I don't see long-term a long tail of public cloud providers. And I don't know if HP's going to be in for it. I just don't know.
I just don't understand how they say they can be in that business, but then not competing with the likes of AWS. I don't get that.
Well, it could be they're about to market with Helion, though, too. If their route to market is OpenStack as a managed service or OpenStack services or private cloud services that they're delivering to a customer and working hand-in-hand in with in terms of, you know, here's a almost like a reference architecture for private cloud on all HP hardware, I could see that being a route to market, right? But to go in there and say we're going to be competing against Amazon and the like with, you know, our cobbled together distro of OpenStack, you know, that has all of the strength of their mobile strategy with Palm Pilot.
Oh, ow, ow, ow. It's got to
be like, it'd be like buying, it'd be like saying, hey, we're going to get in the mobile phone business and going out and buying BlackBerry.
Oh. Hey, man, great deal.
Well, they did something like that with Palm, but think about what you said earlier, Nigel, about how many machines, how much compute power Amazon brings online every day.
Mm-hmm.
More stuff.
How much compute power do you think HP manufactures, you know, every day? I bet Amazon can build machines cheaper than HP.
God, I bet that's true.
I bet they do.
But also, too, now here's, I mean, I'm going to give some props to HP on this. That's why I think their cloud line platform is really sharp and smart, because that's like, all right, you know, Amazon, Google, and Facebook are probably not going to buy Cloudbind. But that second tier of large service providers, managed service providers, hosting.
Right. They're going to buy real stuff.
They're going to buy something with a better warranty, you know, something that's not strung together with Velcro. And a stripped down ProLiant is an attractive solution to them.
That's one of the reasons why I like vCloud Air for enterprises, because I know that really a lot of the stuff underneath is EMC. I just know you've got real equipment behind it. I mean, I hate to say it, but for an enterprise, that's just one of the things
that matters.
That, yeah, it's a comfort factor. It's not a dollars and cents. It's not a compliance factor. It's just knowing that you really have RAID, you know, things like that. Amazon doesn't use RAID. Things like that actually just are comfort factors. And I personally think, specifically for enterprises, for data that matters, I think that's important.
Because isn't RAID from the Ark, though?
Like from the Ark, like old school?
Yeah. I mean, saying Amazon doesn't do RAID, but that's not saying that they don't have equivalent protections in there.
Nigel, to convince you and me and the three of us on this, four of us on this podcast is one thing. To convince security auditors and compliance officials, that's a whole different discussion, bro.
Yeah, I get that.
And that's, you know, I mean, if you look at a lot of the storage trends that are going, you're looking at these larger cloud solutions are looking at erasure coding and using that as part of their solution versus RAID because of the dynamics, the scale that they're going after. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's Amazon scale. But enterprise scale doesn't necessarily need to use those more exotic protection schemes, and they're looking for the comfort level. Heck, I had a meeting with a customer one time who said that thin provisioning still wasn't a mature technology.
Wow.
By the way, this guy also didn't have offsite backup and didn't take his tapes offsite. And I'm like,
tapes. Wow. Cool.
So, you know,
no, those, the entrenched are out there. They really are.
Yeah, they really are. There's some, you know, there's some, I mean, wasn't a big customer, wasn't a big company, but still it's like, you know, it exists and there are always going to be, I mean, I would consider them frankly corner cases. I mean, kind of kooks out there that, you know, are never going to bind some of these solutions, but I think that the, you know, the vast majority of traditional enterprises with IT budgets that are, you know, 20 million and above or 5 million and above, they're looking for that sense of security. They're looking for that risk aversion. They're looking for that nobody got fired for buying IBM.
They should be hunted down and sniffed out. Easy for me to say, actually. Snuffed out, yeah.
That's a lot of honey.
Yeah.
That's going into some nasty places.
Oh, let's pivot. Rick, what's the crack with this Veeam announcement? Free endpoint backup or what? And is it coupled with Cisco servers, or are we munging two announcements into one?
Yes.
Hey, what's the crack?
We're chewing on two different pieces of information. Let's start with the very first part. Yesterday, so the 14th of April, Veeam Endpoint Backup went out of beta. So it's a free tool for Windows 7, 8, 8, 1, Server 2008 R2, 2012, 2012 R2, Windows systems, modern Windows systems, free backup using the Veeam kind of engine, as it were, but it's different because it doesn't require it to be a virtual machine.
Okay? So just do me a favor real quick, Rick. What does endpoint mean in context here? I don't get that. Is that just meaning device?
Device, right. Okay, it does support the server OSs, but it's really targeted to, you know, laptops, desktops, exactly. Okay, funny story, exclusive
Surface
here.
Surface RTs.
Surface Pro, not RTs. Funny story, internally we called it Project Ratmir. And the reason why we called it that is because Ratmir, our CEO, kept losing his laptop. Boom. There you go. Okay. So that being said, it's a protection technique built on, like, and I'll give you a little bit more. When we went into Hyper-V in 2011, we learned a lot about doing, quote, Windows stuff. So that really became kind of a early stage of this basic data mover for Windows systems, and now we're extending it to Windows 8, 8.1, 7, and Server 2008 R2, 2012, 2012 R2 systems. So, you know, endpoints, desktop, laptops, yes. Those one or two physical servers, yes. We have big plans for this. And honestly, everyone's automatically jumping to in-cloud backup, and I encourage them to play with that. We have definite aspirations there. But this is a big deal, and it's totally free. What you have right now for free will always be free. But it's really basically a Windows system backup. And it has a hook into the paid product, Veeam Backup and Replication. So you can move it around. You can move it, you know. In fact, during the beta, people were running it in Azure and in Amazon and in vCloud Air. And then now with the when Update 2 comes out next week or so, you'll be able to move those backups of endpoint systems, but they're really cloud servers. You can move those backups back to your on-prem. I mean, how cool is that? I mean, it's really, really powerful for free, if you ask me.
When you're talking about backups, right, so it can't really be that cool, right?
Oh, no. I have to tell people every day how cool it is.
I'm kidding you, man.
But here's the problem. When it goes to a repository, a Veeam backup repository, yes. On the endpoint backup, I don't believe so. I have to double check because we had a number of features that were limited through the beta. But I know if you go, if you hook it into to Veeam backup and replication, yes. And that's really because we have a two-tier encryption mechanism for protection. But probably my favorite part, though, you know, is that it allows you to create a recovery disk so that you can do little things like reset your Windows password locally, stuff like that. It's pretty powerful.
That sounds proper old school, a recovery disk. It reminds me of something like Norton Ghost or something like that.
Yeah, but it's better than that, man.
Oh, no doubt, yeah.
Yeah, it works over Wi-Fi, all kinds of stuff.
Just help me out real quick here, Rick. So I'm struggling to grasp, like, who it's for. So is it like, is it for small shops, new customers, existing customers?
Full disclosure. We want to capture the hearts and minds of IT pros and build an incredible database of leads to then deliver the big plans we have for this product. Okay, so I'm not going to – no smoke and mirrors.
Appreciate that. It's for people that aren't currently customers then, yeah? Predominantly.
Anybody who has that's a technology savvy person that has data on an endpoint and is at risk of losing it. I mean, it's a huge addressable market. It's different than the VMware and Hyper-V and storage people we've been talking to before, and we know that. So we're trying to find these new people. And the article in the Register that came out today, I'll be honest with you, friends, at 4 a.m., for some reason, I woke up really early. I log into Twitter.
Excitement.
Fear. You know, self-preservation, that type of stuff. And you'll probably put it in the podcast notes. Veeam and Cisco, quote, this is the title. Veeam and Cisco buddy up to offer DIY software-defined backup on UCS. With the title being Veeam Lobs Backup Bombs with Cisco Lighting the Fire. Absolutely not the case. Let me explain. Veeam Endpoint Backup was a product I just described the same day, just absolute coincidence. As a Cisco champion, I got a guest blog spot, and I went on to say how I think that the C3160 is a really good idea to use as a backup repository. And, you know, the Register is putting the two together, but they're really totally separate. Now, Veeam historically has really had one product that mattered, okay? And now I'm, you know, you see news on Cisco. And
that was Veeam Zip, right?
Oh, no.
Love my Veeam
but
Zip.
But here's, well, that being said, they're two different stories. And if you know the Register, it's not worth trying to clarify it because then they'll spin it another way. But it was very important to note that, you know, for the data center, VMware and Hyper-V backups, that's where I was going in the blog at Cisco.com, yet Endpoint is a totally different product. Sure, next week after, we're going to have integration between the two products, but it was really two different conversations that were kind of muddled into one.
Okay.
Okay, sorry, I had to get that out. I was like, first thing in the morning, I emailed my boss, communications manager, and I'm like, guys, I love you. This happened, you know, and it was totally organic, but it was incredibly accidental. not a big deal.
So there's this big market, and you know, the things that we always end up talking about here is who guts who and these kind of moves. It looks like you know, by offering this for free forever, that you're really taking a whack at several other folks out there. I mean, who is it? Is it, you know, is it Commvault? Is it Druva? You know, who are you guys trying
to? There's a long list, and I won't be the first to admit it, but you know, when GhostDev, our product manager, told us, he said, "Look, we're 25 years late to endpoint backup. We have to solve problems that all of those tools have today. Everything from built-in create recovery media, reset password, restore over Wi-Fi, inject drivers, easy, it just works." That's what we wanted to address, because those are the problems that those other tools have. And I could probably go out and name a bunch, but that's not really important in the right spirit of this podcast. But
we always talk about whose stuff's who in this podcast.
Come on. But, you know,
I don't want to put you on the spot, though, Rick. It's unfair to ask you.
It's a free tool, 1.0. I'm going to let the market see if it picks up. Internal numbers, I don't think I'm authorized to share it, but I'll tell you, just in the last 24 hours, 3,500 or so downloads of this product.
And that's a square kick in the kahunas to all of the other guys out there that are already doing this and charging for it, right?
Exactly. And then when you play in the hooks that we have to broader data management, hooks into Veeam Backup and Replication, export the backup as a VM, like the VHD or VHDX or VMDK, you know, for free.
But are you not violating some kind of unwritten agreement among all of you guys that none of us are ever going to do it for free, right? Because we're all raking it in.
No.
No?
No. Uncle Ratmere has plenty of money.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not worried about that.
All right.
Is he the guy Everyone that keeps losing his laptop?
That's yeah. right. Well, problem yeah. solved. Veeam endpoint back.
He's got plenty of money. He doesn't have to, you know, he can buy a laptop. Right. My guess is actually, you know, just saying this, looking at it, is that this is a shot at Commvault, one of your biggest competitors in the enterprise space, right? There's people doing it for desktops, you know, to various locations and whatnot, but this really is, you know, an enterprise play. And if Commvault charges for everything, you know, every option all the time, and you guys are offering this for free, it gives you a nice leg up against them.
Well, let me put it in more specific terms. There are scores and scores of deals that we lose where somebody says, "Oh, I can't have two backup products."
Uh-huh.
So take that little slice, right? Chances are 90%+ of their workload is virtualized. Let's look at that 10%. In that 10%, 90%+ of them are Windows. So this free product is that last mile. That's where we're using it in the sales spot.
So it could be massive for you then. Could be. Big plans.
What I cannot share on this podcast is actually wicked scary where they want to go with it, period.
That's a teaser.
Can't we just like put you into a trance, you know, over the waves right now? It's like, Rickatron, you're feeling sleepy.
Your eyes
are getting drowsy.
The name of the product was N-Cloud Backup. I had a dream. Yeah, no, that's not happening. No, I mean, N-Cloud Backup, that's where people are like trying to fit it right now. And I totally understand why they'd want to do it, because the cloud platforms really leave you hanging. And you have this like expectation with a backup product that it can do amazing things for you. How do you put it in the cloud? I mean, people are looking at that, and we don't have like what I call a promoted architecture around it. But when people talk to me privately, I'm helping them get there. So that's what people want, and I'm pretty sure that's what people will get. Guys, don't let my boss hear this. I'll be in trouble.
No, it's dead interesting, Rick, because it's like semi-interesting stuff about backup. It's like...
Nigel, it's semi-interesting? Did you just say that?
Yeah.
What a backhanded compliment. It is interesting. Well,
that's what I mean.
Right. No, backup is never like what most
It's not sexy,
think.
Is it, usually?
No, but when you need it, you need it.
Yeah.
And when you talk about all these new architectures, name your cloud, you know, whatever... new technology. If it's important, it needs protection, period. And if you run it wherever, you need to have an expectation met that when something goes wrong, it can come back. And whether it's the endpoint or it's a VM in the cloud, you know, that's some of the things that we're thinking about now.
This
next
podcast sponsored
get me out of trouble, guys. Come on, move on.
No, that's good. All right, well, that was the end of our tech news anyway. So just a couple of items of business news. I think yesterday or the day before, Docker netted $95 million in Series D funding that apparently they didn't even need. And also, Citrix is warning about poor earnings. So not good news for Citrix. I have a couple of questions around the Docker thing, though. So they net $95 million in Series D that, according to some bigwig at Docker, they didn't actually need. So what's the reason behind going and getting $95 million if you don't need it?
Well, because you can get it on really good terms.
Yeah, exactly, because you can get it.
Yeah?
And all these different series, and we were talking earlier, it's kind of like baseball, or for others, it's like cricket, you know? There's only so many balls and strikes that you can get before you're out, or so many wickets that come your way. And if you have an opportunity to take one that's good, aka a couple million bucks, I think you take it. But you got to know that that's not going to happen forever, and eventually you got to be a .com and not a .org.
So there's another element of this, right? We're at a feeding frenzy with investors. When they see the hottest deals out there, when they see the best companies, they go crazy. The company that led this, Insight Venture Partners out of New York, my guess is that Docker had a line outside their door of people trying to pitch to them, you know, why they should take their money, right? Almost like the Silicon Valley show, right? If you've seen that first episode, you know, it's like different VCs trying to, you know, convince this guy why they should let them invest in him. This was going on with Docker. It had to. Right. There is a bunch of money out there and you're seeing companies want to get in on later rounds for a lot of money who they think the industry leaders are going to be. And Docker's clearly one of those. And so, you know, Docker had good, really good options and probably the best terms to raise money on that they figure they can get. And so, okay, we can take all this money now and it's not going to cost us that much. And they create probably a large employee pool of stock and things like that to keep people interested, to keep every, you know, a lot of the times you think they get all this money, there's nothing left for everybody else. That's kind of true, but they also do create larger pools of employee stock to make sure people are, you know, have an incentive to work hard.
Right.
So that's what went on there. It was a race of fund of a race of investors trying to get in Docker's pants, and Insight succeeded.
Rick, I do have a question around your number of balls and then you're out. So this is Series D round of funding. There's like no limit, really, is there, as to the number of rounds of funding you can take. You could take like Series WXYZ if you want, right?
Well, I think it's a matter of market palpitation. You know, there is no how tasteful is the market
okay.
to all these levels? I use the cricket and baseball analogy just because there's a fixed number of throws.
I think the conventional wisdom is that, you know, there are no F rounds except for very specific types of companies. You know, it's usually DE IPO or DIPO, something of that nature. Now, there are... you know, a couple companies out there that, you know, I can't remember what it was, and I was reading some article. I'll have to dig it up and see if I can throw it in the show notes. But I thought they'd seen 14 rounds of funding over the years.
Right, but that's like consistently throwing foul balls that are hit out of play.
Right.
The loosest of analogies, okay?
Or
wickets that were missed, whatever, in cricket.
No balls wide. Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Balls wide. Thank you.
So, I mean, obviously, I guess it inflates the value of Docker. Are you suggesting then that there's an exit in the not too distant future, Gabriel?
And do they need to exit? I mean, at some point you're going to take too much money that your only exit's IPO.
Or the competition comes up as a dark horse.
Or somebody, you know, somebody eclipses you.
Microsoft.
Right? Exactly. Right.
Right.
Amazon.
I mean, you know, yeah, exactly. What are the I would personally, I mean, I don't have any insight or specific, you know, guidance into, you know, what Docker's business model is, but, you know, I don't think they're making a lot of money. And, you know, it's not a very large team that runs that group. I mean, the money that they would use now is to expand staff services. And then if they wanted to go out and really sell, you know, create a sales force to bring more revenue into the organization. And that in turn shows to investors that they have long-term viability and there is an exit plan there. You know, they've taken over $100 million. What is it, like $135 million or something of that nature?
And only 120 employees, I think.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's that many. But yeah, you know, at some point, the investors want their money back. So they've taken $150 million in three rounds from 10 investors. And that's a fairly short term because the company, you know, while founded back in January 2010, you really didn't hear a whole lot about them until, you know, less than 24 months ago in terms of, you know, market and buzz and whatnot. I mean, I think that they really kind of the breakout was where I started to see a lot more traction was right at OpenStack Summit, Atlanta. And then, you know, then came DockerConf and, you know, now it's, you can't read a tech publication without seeing a reference to Docker, and this containerization, you know, continues to expand and grow.
Nor can you listen to an In Tech We Trust podcast without hearing Nigel talk about him.
Oh, come on.
Docker.
It's news,
Docker,
right?
Docker.
Well, we thought for sure you must have applications in there too, Nigel.
I'm going for AWS.
You got to have plan EFS. B.
EFS.
True.
Backup.
Should we wrap it up then, guys?
God, this was a horrible show.
Hey, man, I'm glad I could make it.